Good afternoon, everybody. Last week I was in Arcata for a couple of days where I used to teach quite often. I was, for some people, what is called a root teacher, which always seems a little weird to me, but that's what they kept calling me up there. So I thought, okay. But it meant supporting the Shuso, who was the one who really is the heart of the Sangha and has held it together ever since the teacher died many years ago. She's been very shy about ordination, very shy about showing herself at all, but behind the scenes she does everything, just almost everything. And little by little, as I encouraged her, and then after I left them, Jean from Santa Cruz, who is now the teacher, began encouraging her even more. So I ordained her, so she has a robe, and Jean made her wear it. Now, she wouldn't wear it otherwise. She was very, very stubborn about it. And finally, Jean talked her into being the Shuso, the head practicer of the Sangha for a whole practice period, to culminate in the answering any question that anybody wanted to ask in a big crowd of people. And she was terrified, absolutely terrified. And I remember how terrified I was. John remembers how scared he was. It's just an amazing experience. You just can't imagine that you could do it. And it's such an interesting experience because you cannot figure out the answers. You have to answer just like that. Somebody asks you the meaning of life, you have to say something right out of your mouth and right out of your belly because you can't think it up here. It's too quick. So actually, it's a fantastic experience because you realize that most of the answers really dwell down in here somewhere. That the answers you figure out, you know, point A and point B and 1 + 1 = 2, doesn't work really in daily life either. That most of our life is spontaneous in the way that Shuso ceremony is. And our best answers come when we don't figure it out, when we simply respond. We hear it, we answer. So I took a question. This often happens, that people can't go to the ceremony and they want to participate, so they send a question with somebody else who's going to be there. And so I got a question to take to her. And it was that we're encouraged to be present at every moment. So what do you do when your moment is so horrendous it's unbearable? And right away she said, just be in your body. Stay in your body. And I thought, boy, that's right. That's right. Just don't go away. Going away makes everything worse. You can just stay there and be with whatever it is. You can deal with it. If you leave in some kind of way of hysteria or fear, you're not there anymore, and it makes it very difficult for you and everybody else. So then I asked her my question, She takes a walk in the woods all by herself every single day. And the woods are all around up there. It's very beautiful. And I said, who goes with you in the woods? Who walks along with you? She said, Namu Kie Butsu, Namu Kie Butsu, Namu Kie Butsu. Plunging into the ocean of Buddha. Plunging into the ocean of Buddha. She did really, really well. Yeah, I was so pleased. All the way around the circle, and every single person there asks a question, and then every single person there congratulates her and says kind things to her. So it's a wonderful ceremony. So I wanted to share you that with you, especially that first one about being in the body. My translation of the Satipatthana Sutra says, to sit, we need to be ardent and fully aware. It's a very old-fashioned translation. I don't think the new ones say that. But I hold to it because it tells me something that I need. That ardency, especially, as well as the fully awareness. That's what Rose was talking about, too, just to be there with your body and be willing to be shot or hacked or whatever it is. If it's a really horrendous, if you're in Sudan or Syria or some horrible place, I mean, there's so many horrible places in the world right now. To be there and to be ardent and aware as we're there, here, wherever, is, I think, one of the best suggestions that we can live with. It means ardently enjoying the screaming of the hawk. Which is so incredible. Judy and I saw him fly away. Beautiful creature, beautiful. I think it's a young one yelling for mommy. But we deal with fear so often, even in our cushy life, which is so, so luxurious, really, compared to all the things that we see everywhere else. It's such a remarkably luxurious life. To develop a real appreciation for being in the body, even here in the midst of our luxury, we need to do it. Actually, we're all in pain of one kind or another. We're all in physical pain, psychic pain, uncertainty. We really don't know what we're going to do next or what's going to happen next. A lot of people are really, really afraid. And maybe for good reason, we don't know. The truth is that we don't know. There's so much we don't know. And the little bit that we do know is just where we are in our body. And however much we allow ourselves to be aware. I read a poem last night by Ammons, A.R. Ammons, who said, if you want to change the world, just words right. If you want to change the world, just be completely present and aware of it, where you are. Don't try to change anything. Part of our suffering is that we're always ragging at things. We see something that wants a little fixing and we sort of rag at it in our mind. Oh, I've got to fix that. Oh, that's not good. Oh, I want some of that. Oh, give me more of that. And the more ragging we do, the more uncomfortable we are and how unsatisfied. Really, only when we can be, what is it? It says on the blackboard there, sturdy on the ground, steady on the ground, that we can actually act with integrity and authenticity. That's a poem that's on the blackboard. If you haven't seen it, take a look. It's long and very encouraging to embrace the world, including the birds and the fish and the trees and everything. But it starts out with taking your stand, being on the ground, or as we say in Zen, take your seat, and just be there. That's harder to do than it sounds. We sit down and then our mind goes whoop, far, far away. Just to keep bringing it back and staying put is the basis of our practice. We try to figure it out. We try to get more. Some people go off to Japan thinking that they're missing something and that they have to get more somehow. I just got an email from somebody who's doing that. Or some people sit hours and hours and hours. It really just takes being an ordinary person sitting down in an ordinary way and being still. That the stillness already allows us to accept things as they are. Once we're still, they talk about the still point. There's a still point in us that's not always ragging at things and running around and trying to get more or get rid of things. It's just quiet. And the more we can love that quiet and not resist it. When I first began to sit, I really resisted it. I dug in my heels like a little kid. You can't make me go there. It's life is too exciting and I want to run around and find out what's all about. And to sit down like this, good heavens, it's just, but the more I sat, the more I thought, oh, this is a whole nother world. This isn't running around, but this is something else. And it's something you can't know unless you stop. That's why Kwang Roshi always tells the new student, shut up and sit down. And they think, oh, how rude. But once you shut up and sit down, a whole world opens up. They say in Zen that pain is our friend, which always seems like a harsh thing to tell us, because of course when we sit still like this, we do hurt. And sometimes we hurt more because we have things actually awry with our bodies, so we have to adjust and adjust some more. But as I said, pain is our natural way to be. And to recognize that and to acknowledge it without making an issue of it, I have learned is extremely important. It's very easy to create a whole story around the pain in my knees as I sit, or the pain in the back, or all of the things that happen. The shoulder that aches and aches. And as John and I were saying, we don't have the stick to hit us on the shoulder anymore, which was a real gift. You know, a big stick, and whack it right there, right where it gets so stiff. And then you relax. Oh, it's so nice. But we don't have that now. So we've got that pain and the pain in the back, all of those things. But Coben always said, you know, the only reason you don't notice what pain you're in is because you're moving around all the time. It's only when you sit still that you notice it. That when we're up and walking, as soon as we feel something, we shift and change and wiggle around until it goes away. Even in our bed, we do that. We just fling ourselves over to a new position. So accepting pain and bowing to it, oh, thank you very much, you're keeping me awake. You can do that. And be grateful. It's what we are, actually. It's part of the mystery of us, of being human and being this body, this very peculiar body, unlike all the other bodies in many ways, two-legged, upright, very weird. So I think my main message is not to bypass our suffering, that we tend to try to ignore it or wiggle ourselves out of it in some way, but to be faithful to the body, to stay with the body, that Rose said, I think is what we have to do wherever we are. And from there we can enact whatever needs to be, however we need to move and do what needs to be done. So that's what I brought today. And maybe you have some questions. Mimi?
So what is it as for just being with the pain and being with the pain?
When one of my little boys was about 7, he was setting the table. And he was carrying dishes, heavy dishes, and he dropped them all on his foot. And he screamed, of course, it was terribly painful. And it just occurred to me to say, let it hurt. And all of a sudden, he was so much better. It still hurt, but if you allow it to hurt, it's different. It's not an assault or an insult, or you don't have to go against it anymore. You just say, okay, Okay. I feel that with my knees now, walking. It really hurts, but I just let it hurt. Okay, little knees, go ahead. It's fine, you know. And it's much finer than if you say, oh, damn, my knees are hurting. I wish it didn't hurt like this and blah, blah, blah. So, does that make sense? Even in really hard times.
My experience is easier said than done. It's so easy to fly away from a troubling situation. And it's so hard to stay right there. And by hard, yes, I mean remembering what techniques I have to relax. Because when my emotions get going, I'm tied up in a knot. Mm-hmm. My memory's gone too. And only the things that is the focus of the upset is there. But I've discovered you can go away and come right back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And go with him.
Yes.
So I guess that's what practice.
That's what practice is. Yeah. Thich Nhat Hanh says, at those situations, you just breathe. You stop and breathe. And Mary Orr says you actually develop a muscle that is the bringing back muscle. I don't know where in our body that could possibly be, but there's something that if we keep bringing it back, it gets stronger. And more able. But we all do that. Yeah.
I saw a video, a little video when I first started meditating. Somebody sent me a little video, a cartoon, a meditation, how to meditate. And it was about meditating at work, taking 2 minutes, 5 minutes, and just coming to your breath and bringing it back. And then your mind wanders and brings it back. And one is bringing it back, and that muscle of attention gets stronger and stronger.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Just to be here. Isn't it odd? We are here. You'd think we would just be here, but we tend to have so many other things in our mind besides this place that we are right now. We just don't. It's hard to be so simple. Utterly simple that we can just be where we are. It seems too almost kind of dumb or a little simple-minded just to be in your own place like this. I mean, what can you say about it? What does it mean? It doesn't mean anything, really. It just means here we are. Here we are. But isn't that nice? It's wonderful, really. I think we lose a lot of the wonderfulness of situations because we go away. And I love the practice that teaches us not to do that so much. very helpful. John?
I wonder, there's so few of us that take up this practice, and it's so powerful and deep. And what do you think? Is there some force that kind of repels us away from this, keeps us in a busy, busy mind?
Why don't more people practice? Everybody asks that question. Kogan always said everybody is practicing. It's just that we practice this way. He said it's a shame if you think the people back home, that you're sitting in your great position and doing this wonderful practice, and the people back home are not, you're wrong. They too are making every effort. So it's important to remember that, because it's easy to think this is special. This is our way. And it chose us. And I don't know why. I feel chosen, don't you? In a way, it's not something I even would have chosen in my logical, intelligent mind. And yet, it's been my whole life. And I'm so grateful for it. It's kind of bizarre, isn't it? You feel that way too, Mimi. Yeah. So one thing is to identify what people's practice is. I learned it when June and I were trying to get a youth permit for the very first thing, that the Pentler State. We had to go to Santa Clara County offices and talk to the Planning Commission people, or the planners, the actual planners. And I was new to the practice and kind of bewildered, as usual. And I began to notice that all the, they weren't even offices, they were just little cubicles with a computer and a lot of papers. But every cubicle had something there that was precious to them. Some had a beautiful stone. Some had a picture of their child. Some had a picture of Yosemite. Everybody had something that was their practice, you could say. Something that helped them to be open, to be connected, not to be so enclosed in that tiny space. So I think that's what Kogan meant. Everybody's making the effort. And if they're lucky, they run into this thing. And if they're able, and many people are not able for one reason or another, if they're able, sometimes you feel like you died and went to heaven. Even though you also feel like your goose is cooked. You know? It's both ways. When people got ordained, Kogan always said he felt sorry for them. You give up a lot. Yes. Yes. Yeah, it's hard.
And then sometimes I wonder,
Well, sometimes we can. Sometimes, I mean, I did choose at the same time that I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, our choices are kind of after the fact in a way. So we can choose, and sometimes, you know, if we're deciding which school to go to or even what to eat off of a menu, we you know, have to say, it's this one, I decide this one. But there are some things that just happen to us.
Strange indeed.
It's very strange.
I feel like I give it in Zen, I never chose it.
Yes.
I never chose that. And I don't know why I'm doing it.
Well, you're not the only one. Welcome to the club. Somebody sent me a Tibetan poem. I meant to bring it, and I forgot this morning. But the main message is, you are so lucky to have found this practice. Now just be as ordinary as you possibly can. I like that. I go to some Zen centers here and there, and people are walking around like this and sort of being so Zen, and I think, oh my word, this is scary. I don't know what to say to people like that. But I think our practice makes us more who we are. Boils us down to our goodness and our sweetness. And, we're very fortunate. Do I think so? Yes. I do. I feel very fortunate.
Because things happen to you?
Yes.
I hope so. Yes.
Well, for one thing, it gives us like-minded people, which is always a blessing. We have people to talk to and to, who understand us a little bit. That's very nice. That's a lovely feeling. And we can understand them, which is even better. Feels really good. Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. All one little package. Maybe it's time to sit some more. Yeah. adjust the time. Thank you all. Mm-hmm.